Hey, everybody. Welcome to Moxie Bets, presented by Caesars Sportsbook. I'm your host, Katie Mox. I'm still in California today. It's my last day here. Then I'll be back in my home studio. Coming up on today's show, we'll take a look at some of the most popular prop bets at Caesars. And there's a lot of love for Trey Lance, which is exciting, but a little bit scary for me, actually. I'll give you my picks there. And with all the legal stories in sports this week, we decided to bring on a sports attorney to hash it all out. From Deshaun Watson to LIV Golf, we will break it all down. And of course, I will give you my Mox Locks. Now let's get into it. First up, it's a Mox Thought. That's how I like to start this show, guys. Here are the top three most popular offensive player season-long prop bets by handle on Caesars Sportsbook. One, we've got Miles Sanders under 5.5 rushing touchdowns. That's at minus 175. Then we got two Trey Lance props, which is exciting for me, but a little bit scary here. Trey Lance over 625.5 rushing yards is at minus 125. That actually opened up at 475.5. So huge jump there since he was named the starter. And also his rushing touchdowns, the over 5.5 is a popular bet at minus 140. So which bet should you take? I think, look, I'm a Niners fan. I'm a little bit like superstitious. I'm not going to put so much weight on Trey Lance. Again, I am hopeful that he is going to be that guy and he's going to be great. But I think we have to be realistic about his start here. This is still a rookie season for him. He only played in a couple full games last season. Having him rush this many yards and this many touchdowns, I'm just not putting money on that at this point. What I am going to do is I'm going to fade Sanders. So he's heading into his final year of his rookie deal. He missed five games last season due to injury. But guess what, guys? He did not have one rushing touchdown last season. Now, Sirianni says, Miles is our guy. But is he really their guy? If you look at the running backs, they're probably going to rotate with Gainwell and, of course, Boston Scott as well. And look, you've got Jalen Hurts, who is a dual threat quarterback. He's going to be rushing the ball as well. NFL.com also ranked Sanders 31 out of 32 running backs next season. So while I'm hopeful for Lance, I feel more confident in fading Sanders, even if it's a little juicy at minus 175. All right, people, we're brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. See, it's not just about the daily promos, odd boosts, or the hundreds of ways to wager. It's about the immortal words of Caesar himself. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Every bet you place on the app, no matter the outcome, earns towards exclusive perks at Caesars Rewards destinations everywhere. Hotel stays, concert tickets, bonuses, and more. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app, become a Caesars Rewards member today and get more with every wager. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. So let's welcome in our guest today, Dan Lust, who is a sports attorney and actually a big component as to why there is legalized sports betting in the city of New York. He is also a law professor and a podcast host. You're a busy, busy guy and also a father of two Disney girls, which I really appreciate about you. Dan, how's it going?
I wear a lot of hats. I enjoy wearing them. And we got my sports, we got my law, and then as I might have divulged, I got my Disney princess encyclopedia over here, which, you know, you have to as a girl dad.
You have to as a girl dad. And I absolutely love that. All right, let's start with the biggest topic of the week. Deshaun Watson, he was handed a 6-game suspension. The league has informed the Players Association that they will appeal the decision. Give us your legal take on this situation.
Okay, a couple things. So the appeal by the NFL not so surprising. But, you know, Katie, I'm told this is a pseudo betting show, so I'll give you my kind of betting side of it.
Please.
Right? Watson did what I would call a very risky bet. We'll say it's a two-leg parlay. He was suspended by, you know, for six games by Judge Sue Robinson. So before that proceeding, he was offered, according to multiple reports, a 12-game settlement. So Watson said, you know what? I think I can do better in front of Judge Robinson. And he was right about that first leg of the parlay. The second leg, right? I speak the
You're usually leg. Right about the first leg, and then it starts to tumble after
That's why we tell our friends only you single bets. But here's the thing, right? The second one was kind of wagering that the NFL would not take this up on appeal this to Roger Goodell or his designee. And that's where kind of Watson, was maybe miscalculated his bet here, because the NFL obviously took that up. So he could have walked away with a 12-game suspension. Okay, he's back week 13. It is what it is. But now, right, the NFL is seeking an indefinite suspension of at least 1 year. So maybe a calculated misstep if you're Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, absolutely, because he could have had just 12. So how long does this process take of appeals? We got the season starting pretty soon. Is this going to be decided on before the start of the season?
So it's going to be tough to tell, right? Right now we're dealing with this intermediate appeal to the NFL or Roger Goodell's designee. And Roger Goodell has now noted he is not going to be presiding over the case. It's going to be former attorney general. So someone that's served on the NFL's diversity committee, someone that's handled the Ezekiel Elliott arbitration case. So someone that is very friendly with the NFL. So I think this level of the appeal will probably take a week or two, will be done before week one. But here's the problem, Katie, as we remember well with the Deflategate saga. That case, when it went up to federal court, right, when the actual federal court case took place, that took over a year. I can tell you that this initial leg is probably going to take a week or 2 weeks. But then the next leg, right, it really might take a year. If Watson really wants to take this to true and try, you know, federal court with multiple judges and multiple real appeals, not just appeals to, you know, Goodell to Kangaroo Court.
To Goodell Kangaroo Court. I love the way you said that. Okay, like you said, it's a sports betting show. So what are the implications, do you think, in the sports betting world? I'm sure sportsbooks, right now are in a bit of a tizzy trying to figure out what to do with the Browns, over and unders, and any Deshaun Watson props.
So I have not seen any line move more than those Watson props, right? And also separately, right, the over-under props for the Browns win total. So, you know, when the NFL announced they were appealing this and everyone, you know, said, hey, they're going to probably win in this level of appeal. Mind you, in our fictional casino here, I think the NFL odds to win at this appeal level are like, I don't know, minus 500, right? It's a friendly form. But as for those odds, right, I think the Browns over-under win total line was 9.5. That then was reduced to 8.5 because I think they assume that, you know, Jacoby Brissett is a significant downgrade, with respect to Watson. Here's the interesting one, Katie, if we're looking for some value for our bettors. Week one, the Browns are in Carolina to play Baker Mayfield and the Carolina Panthers.
Yes.
So on paper, right, if Watson and Baker are playing, I don't know, no brainer. I think the Browns should be a heavy favorite. But when you look at that line right now, it's a pick 'em. So the sports books do think that Watson's going to be off the field. But as I remember very well from the Brady saga, Brady lost, right? And he took the case to, to actual federal court. And what Brady sought, and I think is what Watson's going to seek, is something called a stay of his suspension. Now, that means that the NFL suspension will be held in abeyance while the federal court is working it out. So while the federal court is deciding whether Watson is right or wrong, he's going to ask the court, hey, please lift that NFL suspension. Let me play until you figure out if I'm right or wrong. So I actually think there is a realistic scenario that he's on the field in week one. And then that pick'em game, I mean, that should be like a 5.5 game, a 6.5 favorite for the Browns. So me personally, I'm very closely watching those lines.
Wow. So you're saying there's a real likelihood that Deshaun Watson could play in game one, which I think absolutely nobody thought was a possibility because they thought he would be suspended for at least the six games. But that's very interesting. But do you think that the Brady case, Deflategate versus kind of a sexual assault or sexual misconduct rather case kind of weighs the same in the court's eyes in terms of that kind of leniency?
So you hit something on, you know, hit the nail on the head, right? Watson got a six-game suspension. Brady has a suspension for deflating balls. Zeke Elliott has a domestic violence case. And if you want to throw in random suspensions here, DeAndre Hopkins gets a six-game suspension for PED. So the NFL is all over the place. But when it comes to the actual merits of the suspension, what the court will look at is what they looked at in the Brady saga. Was the disciplinary process fair? And who agreed to it, right? The union agreed to it, and the league collectively bargained for it in the 2020 CBA. And that's what they came up with. Appoint an independent arbiter. Right? Here was Judge Robinson. She's going to come up with an offense, some type of punishment here. And then that second level of appeal will go to an NFL-friendly forum. Who agreed to that? The league and the players. So when it goes up on appeal, usually, and it doesn't have to be sports, right? Courts are really hesitant to overturn the decision of a private organization unless there's some type of fraud or some type of real unfairness involved. And here, right, the lawyers with respect to the league and the union agreed to this procedure. Maybe that wasn't so smart, but I mean, they agreed to let Goodell be on the end here. So that's why Brady lost, once it went up on appeal, and why I think truthfully on merits, I think Watson is really at a, we're talking about big underdog on the merits if this goes to federal court. So I don't necessarily think he's going to win in federal court, but I do think a realistic chance that he is playing week one, week two, week three, while the case is being decided actually at that federal court level.
Well, if it takes an entire year, he might play the whole season, which would be even more wild. All right, let's switch gears here and talk Dolphins. Though the Dolphins were not penalized for Ross allegedly telling head coach Brian Flores to tank, a team losing games on purpose clearly has an impact on sports betting. What if the Dolphins would have been found guilty of tanking as well?
Well, practically, you and I would be leading with that story instead of the Watson story. I think bribing and a coach is probably a big story. You want to laugh, right? We're talking about Deshaun Watson, a 6-week suspension, and DeAndre Hopkins, 6-week suspension. Stephen Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, also hit with a 6-week suspension. So 6-week suspensions are all not created equal in NFL world. The thing, right? I can't really make sense of that, but we'll try to solve football's punishment problems at a later point in time. Here's the thing when it comes to this punishment. The NFL, this investigation stemmed from Brian Flores' class action discrimination lawsuit. Yep. So in his complaint, and I said at the time, I'm like, why in this complaint about racial discrimination is he talking about being bribed or offered a bribe to lose games? I'm like, that has nothing to do with the case, but it's going to apply a little bit more pressure to the Dolphins. So fast forward like 6 months, here we are, and the owner of the team is now suspended and really an unprecedented suspension. So I don't know, tampering, Katie, you and I follow the NBA as much as we follow the NFL and really all sports. The NBA deals with tampering all the time, right? I think the Knicks are being investigated right now for the Jalen Brunson signing, the Sixers with respect to James Harden. Tampering happens all the time. But we don't see punishments in sports where owners are suspended for weeks and fined $1.5 million and losing first-round picks. That seems to me to be a punishment that would probably be closer to a tanking-type punishment. Mm. But the NFL didn't want to call it that. And I think if the NFL had found that the team lost games on purpose, totally different story. That's the A block, right? So that's why we're here. They want to call this a tampering punishment, not a tanking one. But in my optics, it looks kind of like a tanking punishment.
Yeah, and I agree with you in terms of the accusations being a little bit different in terms of tanking versus the racial discrimination. But I feel like maybe he was trying to paint a picture of, would he have asked a white coach to tank games like this? And maybe it was kind of painting that picture. Of course, we don't know for sure. But for me, I think it does actually go hand in hand with racial discrimination, because we don't know if that would happen with a white coach.
That's completely fair. I mean, and you asked the question, right? What would we be dealing with on a gambling saga? I mean, gambling, right? That's if you lose games on purpose, and right, and the allegation here, for those that haven't been following that closely, Brian Flores alleged that he was offered $100,000 a game to lose. And maybe that would be, I don't know if I believe it or not, but I follow social media, as I'm sure you do and everyone else. I mean, hashtag tank for Tua was trending at this time. That was the year. So the owner saying that is one thing, and the NFL found that Stephen Ross didn't just say it once, he said it multiple times. And the NFL found that he said it in joke, joking. He was not being serious. But if we're, putting on our legal hats here, the standard as to whether someone else makes a real offer is whether the person that heard that offer reasonably thought it was a real offer and not a joke. And we know that Brian Flores, he's a reasonable person, right? That's the standard. He thought it was serious. He put it in his complaint. He swore under oath that it was a serious offer. He put it in writing. I think he complained to the Dolphins brass that he felt uncomfortable at these overtures. So I don't know. The NFL believed that he said it. Ross said it a couple times, but I guess didn't believe Brian Flores that that it was a serious offer. So yeah, very different story if the NFL had found that the bribery occurred. But serious tampering allegations are no joke in and of themselves.
No joke in and of themselves. Okay, let's switch gears here to golf. LIV Golf has been controversial since its creation, and now 11 LIV golfers, including six-time major champion Phil Mickelson, are filing an antitrust lawsuit against the PGA tour for suspending them from the tour. Do the LIV golfers have a case here?
This was supposed to be the off season. There's all these cases left and right. I mean, I don't know what's going on.
You're a busy guy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I guess when the athletes are on in their off season, they decide to make everyone's life very busy. So here's the thing. With respect to LIV Golf, this is a lawsuit that we saw coming for a certain amount of time. Since Phil Mickelson, who's the lead plaintiff in this case, kind of made his comments that the PGA Tour had too much control over its golfers. Now, a couple procedural points. LIV Golf is not a member in this lawsuit. It's 11 golfers suing the PGA Tour. So the other thing that I think maybe is interesting, right? We're talking a lot about LIV golfers losing sponsorships by leaving the PGA and being associated with this kind of Saudi-backed golf league. And I don't guess it doesn't apply to lawyers. Three of the largest law firms in the country are representing these golfers. Wow. Phil Mickelson, Bryson DeChambeau, right? Some guys that lost major sponsorships, doesn't really apply to lawyers. So listen, I'm not representing them. No one can back me here and get angry at me. I'm telling you about the case. You know, at its heart of hearts, this is really a case as to how much control the PGA Tour can have over golfers who are not members of a union like the NFL has or NBA has or Major League Baseball. Golfers are independent contractors. So how is the PGA Tour wielding this level of control? Independent contractors, right? That's like a freelancer. That's like a plumber. Right. That's like an electrician. How can the PGA Tour suspend a plumber, right? That doesn't really make sense. But that's, you know, that's really at the heart of this case. The level of control over non-employees, that's what we have here.
Which is interesting. So let's say the PGA loses this case. How does it affect the long-term viability of the tour?
Okay. So listen, I'm normally a glass half full guy, but this is the interesting one. The PGA Tour, in addition to being hit with this lawsuit, they are being investigated by the Department of Justice for what they call unfair competitive acts in suspending these golfers who went to go play for another event. And mind you, right, if my plumber wants to go, you know, work on someone else's house, what right do I have to suspend him, right? That doesn't seem to make sense.
At all.
The freelancers work for me. So if the PGA Tour loses this, it's another domino into an incumbent taking over. You know, in addition to being a practicing lawyer, I'm a sports law professor. I'm a historian with regards to sports cases and incumbent leagues, you know, being going against upstart leagues. You can look at the USFL. You can look at the American Basketball Association, the WHA in hockey. And at least as far as I know, there has never been an upstart league with more money than the incumbent league. So yeah, you can get hit with antitrust, Department of Justice. At the end of the day, that LIV money is substantially more than the PGA money. So viability of the league, again, I wish I could be a glass half full guy. I think it's looking pretty bleak if you're a fan of the PGA Tour.
I love that you are comparing plumbers, not really, but plumbers to PGA golfers. But yes, I like the analogy and it makes a ton of sense because yes, if your plumber goes to your neighbor's house, you can't necessarily suspend them. But I guess is it like an at will, like they can choose to hire you or not hire you type of thing? I mean, obviously suspension is a weird term, but can they just be like, we don't want to work with you anymore? Like you went to my neighbor's house, now I no longer want to work with you. Is that fair?
Well, it's interesting. Golfers aren't exactly plumbers. So your point is well taken, but it's like, unless you're a complete psychopath and you have like code of conduct for my plumbers on your wall, right? Like that's kind of what the PGA Tour has. Yes, they are independent contractors, but they're somewhat of a gray area because there is the handbook, right? In order for a PGA golfer to play in some type of charity event, they have to ask for a specific exemption. So PGA Tour doesn't want to give these exemptions. And these golfers are like, well, isn't that the same thing? Like, why is this different than playing in a charity event for my local club? And what the PGA Tour, I think, will argue is this is a league. This is a competing entity. So it's not like playing in a charity event. So, yes, it's a gray area. And what the PGA Tour will say, hey, you might not be a union. You might not be our employees, but you did agree to this handbook in some way, shape, or form. You agreed to these suspensions or these potential fines that could come. So that's the argument. The PGA Tour is going to be like, listen, we are not overstepping our bounds. You agreed to this. And, you know, that's what it is. And obviously on the other end, you have these golfers saying, we are independent contractors. We should be able to work wherever we want. We are not getting a piece of the pie like NFL players do, like NBA players do. So how are you able to exert more control, you know, like a league would? So that's really where we are. And it's an unprecedented case for golf, but one that is not so foreign to sports. Minor leaguers are having a similar lawsuit with respect to Major League Baseball. And over in the NCAA, college athletes are trying to allege that with respect to the NCAA. So these antitrust lawsuits, all of a sudden, there's something in the waters here.
Do you think that there potentially could be a unionized golf situation?
Could be, right? I think there's always been talks about it. And not to get too far off track, but, you know, we've never had unions in college sports. And all of a sudden, there's whispers of unions popping up in the Big Ten and other leagues or across our college sports landscape. So, yeah, I mean, maybe this is the time to do it. Not to get so down in the weeds, but if you do have a union arguing, you know, with owners, you're allowed as your specific entity to do things that would normally be violative of antitrust law. So, oh. Katie, again, like, this is kind of crazy. In theory, the NFL draft, where, you know, players get slotted onto random teams, that's actually violative of antitrust law. You can't, like, put someone on a team. Like, if you're the top engineer in the country and you graduate Harvard Law and you're like, oh, I'm going to go work for some big tech company and get paid millions of dollars, and you get a letter in the mail, hey, you've been drafted by IKEA, you have to go fly over to Sweden right now. That's not allowed.
Yeah, that is crazy.
it's a labor restriction, right? You can't do that. Right? Because the union and the league have agreed to that. That's what's called a non-statutory labor exemption. So the short answer is that maybe the PGA Tour is thinking about it. Maybe allowing golfers to unionize ends some of these discussions. So once upon a time, that's what happened at the NFL level, Major League Baseball, NBA, and maybe you have that coming to golf at some point in time.
That'll be really interesting. All right, let's bring this back to betting. What does this do for golf futures?
So here's the thing, right? We have events, that PGA events, that the LIV golfers are not allowed to compete in. That's what we're dealing with right now. These golfers in seeking, going to court, the first level of relief they are seeking is similar to what we just talked about with Deshaun Watson, a temporary restraining order. They're asking for those PGA-issued suspensions to be stayed and held in abeyance while this case is working itself out. So this case, similar to the Watson case, if it goes to, you know, go all the way the distance in federal court, could go for a year, right? So if you're trying to figure out these PGA Tour futures, if you see a bet right now and you're looking at the favorites, those odds are certainly subject to change. If you have guys like Bryson and Phil that could enter the field, like Taylor Gooch, right? Ian Poulter, some fairly big names. So if you're trying to figure out who to bet on, I would really hang tight. Yeah. You know, you might have some decent names entering those fields for even some local PGA Tour events. So yeah, I'd be watching those odds very closely. Those are certainly subject to change.
Okay, good advice. Now let's switch gears here to probably the saddest news, I think, is Brittany Griner, who was found guilty of possession and smuggling drugs into Russia. She was sentenced to 9.5 years. She's already served about 6 months. There's some talk about a prisoner swap with the U.S. Obviously, the conflict that's happening in Ukraine right now is causing a whole lot of problems. What's your legal opinion on what's going on here? Do you think we'll be able to get Brittany Griner home?
You know, so I want people to know, right? 9 years sounds like a very long sentence, but for me, at least, you could have said that sentence was 500 years, 1,000 years. To me, that number is irrelevant.
Okay.
I think the time frame on President Biden and Kamala Harris bringing her back home is significantly less than 9 years. Okay. So that's a number for show. Legal perspective, you know, Brittany Griner's defense here, if you want to call it that, is that this was an accident. She kind of very quickly packed and put something in her bag that shouldn't have been. And if even in our, you know, American courts, I don't want people to think that's such a crazy Russian law. If you have a handgun in your car and you didn't realize it and the cop finds it, you're still in trouble, right? Some of these offenses are not based on intent. So, you know, we're talking about a prisoner swap at a time. We just had the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Talk about trades in any number of sports. That, you know, jokes aside, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, you know, some individuals that were being held in Russia and the United States. And there's seemingly a multi-party trade being worked out here. But again, the time frame on that seems to be much quicker than 9 years. So rest assured, this has got to the highest levels of the government. So people can say, why is Brittany Griner cutting in line? You know, for better, for worse, that's what we're dealing with. It has gotten to Joe Biden and Harris, and it seemed to be working in negotiation as we speak.
Right. I think they've coupled her with another prisoner that's been there since 2018, trying to get them released. Hopefully that, I mean, 9 years to me sounds like a long time, but I understand with what you're saying. You're right. It is an arbitrary number because they're working to get her home as fast as they can. I did see that maybe, and it could have just been a false report that they had rejected the prisoner swap, which maybe isn't exactly true. I don't think we're going to know everything there is to know, but still, yeah, it is sad and it is scary in the sense that you can make a mistake. You can accidentally leave something in your bag and end up in, you know, Russian prison for at least 6 months, up to 9.5 years. But to your point too, there was a mistake that was made. She did break a law there. Even if we don't feel like it was a huge law to be broken here, it is what it is. And we just hope that she can get home safely and quickly.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you. And you know, at some point in time, I think the strategy was to not let anybody know that she was being, held prisoner. Yeah. That I think lasted for, 2 weeks. And now, you know, for better or for worse, it's got to the highest level. So it's a high profile case. It's gone from a sports story to very much a political story, but you know, I think the wheels are in motion to bring her back home.
Good. I hope it is sooner rather than later. All right, let's talk legalization of sports betting. Obviously, the legalization of sports betting has made the industry boom, but there are still limitations, especially by state. For example, in New York, you cannot bet on the NFL draft, while other states can. Is there a realistic way to remedy these inconsistencies?
Let's hope. And I don't want to take all the credit for it. We were just a sports show kind of saying, hey, it's not like, let's not get in the weeds of which bill is correct. Let's just get it legalized and then we'll figure it out. But yeah. Katie, probably one of the issues in that and a conversation that you and I had once upon a time, right, in New York, where I'm from, right, yeah. You could not bet legally on the NFL draft props or NBA draft props. And, you know, certain states you can. So in New York, they have a specific carve out that says that you can only bet on sporting events. And I guess the draft is, you know, it's not necessarily a sporting event. It's not an athletic endeavor. People are just pressing right. buttons and picking up phone calls. So is there a way to get it done, you know, short of some type of federal law coming in and cleaning up the landscape? Not really. We're having a federal legislation, a conversation over in the NIL and college sports world, try to normalize those rules across various sports and states. I think, you know, as we're seeing in the majority of states have legalized sports betting, what we can hope for in this sense is that the states that are coming along, they're looking at the most successful states and seeing what those handles are and seeing the complaints that, you know, even like a state like New Jersey, they couldn't bet on that St. Peter's, you know, Sweet 16 run.
Yes.
And like New York, in New Jersey.
Yeah.
They could bet on right every other team other than their home teams. Like, how does that make sense? Yeah. That if you're trying to talk about maximizing revenue in the state, I don't know who came up with that. So, yeah, I think it'll take people like you and I making fun of the states that have the wrong laws. Shout out to New York. Your draft NBA and NFL draft laws make no sense. But, you know, there's always time for change. And again, we try to have conversations with the politicians to continue to tweak the laws and legalize in the states that haven't done it yet.
Yeah, it's so funny, especially in states like the tri-state area, when you could pop over to states really quickly with New York and New Jersey having different laws, like you could bet on the Peacocks in New York. So people from Jersey could just drive right over and place a bet there. Or if you wanted to bet on an MVP or something, you could go to Jersey and do it. So it's at that point, it's like kind of ridiculous when it's all so close. But I get it. Every state is separate. And hopefully they'll reverse that on the New York side, because it is kind of a bummer for us.
Yeah, we'll see. But for those that are wondering, like, is it really legal that I'm driving across state lines? Depending on your state, yes. By and large, that is totally, totally fine.
Okay.
Some states actually make you like, drive to the casino, but at least yes. In the Northeast, I think we're pretty good. You can just go across state lines. So whenever your phone pings, it grabs your location, you're usually pretty good.
Good to know it's legal, because I would hate to give out illegal advice here on VoxyBets. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today. I know that you also host a podcast, so why don't you tell the people where to find you and what kind of information they can find on that?
Yes, I host the Conduct Detrimental podcast in addition to the number of hats that I wear, but we cover all things at the intersection of sports and law. I think really all of these topics that we've covered in what has been a very busy week of sports law. So college sports unions, Dan Snyder, Deshaun Watson,
yes.
We really cover the full gambit. There is no sports issue that we take on to over, you know, that we take for granted. Even a Formula One legal dispute we are covering. And obviously, there's always gambling implications, so we cover that stuff too.
I love that. And let the people know where to find you on social as well.
Yes, I am at Sports Law Lust on Twitter and Instagram. And sports law guy, sports betting guy, and a Disney princess guy. So again, a lot of hats in the Lust household.
Those are my favorite hats to wear. Dan, again, thank you so much for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
Moxie Bets is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. Must be 21 or older. All right, the time has come. Let's get into Mox Locks. Here are my three best bets for the MLB slate tonight, and I've got some underdogs for you. All right, first up, I'm looking at the Braves money line versus the Mets. Is that the Braves lost Thursday night's matchup 6-4, but this is a big game for them, and it's also a big series. They are four games behind the Mets in the NL East, and they need to stay as a leader in this wild card race, and they've got a pretty good road record. They're 26-21 on the season so far on the road. It's Anderson versus Walker on the mound tonight. Walker has been pretty good, actually. He's 9-2 with a 2.79 ERA. Anderson, not so much. 9-6 with a 4.99 ERA, but he's coming off of a pretty strong start. He allowed just one hit in six innings, and he picked up a win for his team on Saturday versus the Diamondbacks. And the Braves also 30-11 when coming off of a loss this season. So that is in their favorite. Sharp money is on the Braves, 61% of tickets and 100% of the money, according to BetQL. So I'm going to back the underdog here and hope that the Braves can pull out a win here. Next up, I'm looking at the Rockies money line versus the Diamondbacks. This is at plus 110, again, on Caesars Sportsbook. We got Mad Bum on the mound today. Not exactly what he used to be with the Giants. He's 6-10 on the season versus Marquez, who is 6-9. Rockies are 7-2 in their last nine games versus a starter with a whip greater than 1.30. Baumgartner is 1.36 whip. Rockies also 7-2 in their last nine games versus a team with a losing record. Now, we know the Diamondbacks have a losing record. They are 46-58 on the season. Arizona also 1-5 straight up in their last six games. And when we look at these two teams head-to-head, Colorado 5-1 straight up in the last six matchups versus Arizona. So I like the Rockies on the money line here. All right. And lastly, I'm looking at the Red Sox versus the Royals. I'm taking a Nerfy here. It's at minus 135. Now, normally, I don't like to take a run in the first inning unless it is at plus money. But when I was looking at these stats, it lends pretty hard towards the Nerfy. We got Greinke versus Winkowski. Both have had bad ERAs, but surprisingly have been pretty good in the first inning. Winkowski is scoreless in eight of his last nine first innings overall. And Greinke in 19 road starts, he's allowed only two runs in the first innings of all of those 19 starts. And before last night, both of these clubs had 10 no runs in the first innings in a row. I like the Nerfy here at minus 135. So to recap, we're doing the Braves money line versus the Mets, the Rockies money line versus the Diamondbacks at plus 110, and the Red Sox versus the Royals. I'm taking the Nerfy at minus 135. All of those odds, of course, via Caesars Sportsbook. All right, this is going to wrap up our show, but please don't forget to follow us on social on at MoxieBets or me at Katie Mox on Twitter, at Katie Mox Bets on Instagram. This has been Moxie Bets presented by Caesars Sportsbook. We'll see you next week.